broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
The president does not believe that that criticism comes based on the color of his
skin. If you followed Acorn for the years, as I have, here in the Senate,
I think that certainly by the time the Finance Committee in this room,
this resolution addresses an issue of great importance.
Cuddle with me.
You are going to hell.
Famous Phil Hendry show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast to 4 a.m. on the East Coast. That's a little bit of what's going to happen on the show tonight. Cuddle with me, you're going to hell. Resolutions, Baucus has a health care plan, Acorn, Bertha Lewis, and Jimmy Carter. The former president of the United States, President Carter, made what I thought was a pretty astute observation. It needs to be made more. We have to understand that there wasn't a magic wand that was waved someplace, that race still plays a part in perception in this country. It just does, and I can give examples from my own personal life, and I'm loath to do that because I'm almost giving away white people's secrets, you know. But for the purposes of truth, I can't tell you how many whites I run into when they don't think there's any black folks around, and they say, you know, it's these blacks, you know, that Louis Farrakhan, why doesn't he go back to Africa? You know, I heard that I shouldn't say, but I heard it in a very, very prominent business, well-known. As a matter of fact, this business does big-time advertising nationally and makes a lot of money. And I went in to actually do business in this place, and one of the people that works for this business was expressing this opinion about Farrakhan going back to Africa. Now, fine, great. Farrakhan ain't a great guy. I don't like the guy. But the going back to Africa thing, man, don't tell me that doesn't mean race. Don't even go there with me. And when I get into cabs, listening to the cab drivers, because they think because you're white, you're on board, right? And the next thing you hear is N-word this and N-word that until I have to lie sometimes. I'll say, you know, my mother was black. And they'll, really, sir? They can look right back at me and see this white, pasty-faced Irishman. But these guys are so stupid, they're just going to have... They can't take the chance of not believing, right? I'm not talking about all of them. My mother was black, and my brother, who died recently in a beating at the hands of the Klan, was black. But that's okay. Just drop me off up here. Oh, yeah, sir, that's it. So we'll talk about that on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-87... I don't know what am I going to talk about.
About your mom getting beat up.
My mother didn't get beat up, man. He didn't say mom did. He said he made it up on the time I talked to the cab driver.
What? What do you mean you made it up?
Why don't you listen to what I'm doing, man? All right, we're also going to have, so we'll have Jimmy Carter, and the reason why I brought that up is the president made, I thought, an astute observation, but now he's going a little bit overboard because everything has to do with race. He's talking about the Hitler pictures of Obama, and some of that stuff is, I think, reactionary to what was going on with Bush. Some of that is being presented, I think, by right-wingers, conservatives. The more extreme element that supported Bush, they want a little payback. See, nobody's factoring that in. There's a little payback thing that's happening here. Bush took endless amounts of heat and crap and maybe a little bit of number one thrown in for his policies, and was compared to Hitler and was compared to a Nazi. And when I heard Ed Schultz say he never once saw any picture of Hitler or any comparison between Bush and Hitler, I got to ask myself... Well, never mind. It has to do with Down syndrome.
I think he is too.
I didn't say that. All right, 877-876-PHIL. I want to start off, though, by mentioning the passing of veteran comic character actor Henry Gibson. Henry Gibson, whose career included the 1960s hit Laugh-In and more recently King of the Hill, died on Monday. Gibson died at his home in Malibu after a brief battle with cancer. He was 73. You remember Henry Gibson from a great many films, like, for instance, Magnolia. He starred in movies like The Incredible Shrinking Woman. He had a very prominent role in Nashville. He was nominated, in fact, for a Golden Globe for his performance in Nashville. The Long Goodbye. He worked with director Robert Altman, in fact, in quite a few movies. And I only say that I worked with him. I was very happy to have met Henry Gibson because I worked with him on a number of these King of the Hills that they mentioned. I think about three or four episodes, and to the point where when I saw Mr. Gibson, I'd say, Henry, Phil Hendry, and he would remember me, and we'd sit down and we'd talk, and I was interested in talking to him because of his history, his career, his longevity in the entertainment business as an actor. And he was a very forthcoming guy. He had a very happy demeanor about him. He lived in the same house in Malibu with his wife, who I believe she's passed on as well, for many, many years. And he said something to me that I'll never forget, and I'll share this with you. After we talked about him and all of the things that he went through in his career, he said, you know, I left Laugh-In because I had to. If I didn't leave Laugh-In when I left Laugh-In, I would always be the guy standing there with the flower. Those of you that remember Laugh-In, he would recite poetry with a flower, you know, and it was kind of cornball stuff and goofy. He said, I had to go out. I had to do something else. So he took a shot, and the money that he made with Laugh-In, he bought his home out in Malibu, and he went out, and he became
talented.
No, it ain't talented. How about you, Robert?
Much more, like, fat?
Not fat. Anyway, he worked a lot, okay? Fat.
What do you mean, fat?
I don't.
In any event, he went out and he did his thing. So, we talked about all of that, but here was the thing that he said to me that has stayed with me, and I've repeated it more and more and more and over and over and over again. He has three sons, and he said, do you know what the mark of success for me has been? I said, what? He said, the fact that my three sons have lunch together every week. And I said, boy, that is something, man. You should be proud of that as a father. He said, I'm very proud. My wife and I, we're very proud of the fact that our three sons have lunch together every week. And they do, and I believe one of them or two of them is in the entertainment business, but be that as it may, that was what he was most proud of, and I just wanted you to know that. I just wanted to say that because I hope that there's a lot of discussion of Henry Gibson and the fact that he's no longer with us. He was a really talented guy, and as I said in our Uncensored pre-show, I believe he stole those scenes in Magnolia from William Macy, who's a hell of an actor, but Henry Gibson just, you know, was in that character like you wouldn't believe. But as a professional and working with him on King of the Hill, the cat was there with all the other actors. He wasn't coming in and recording his stuff separate. He sat in the green room and talked to all the other actors. He would go into the studio and record his parts with the other actors. And he was a sweet, sweet guy. And I really was stunned when I heard this news today. But take that with you. There's a little bit of something from Henry Gibson's life that we can all use. He said, the mark of my success was the fact that all three of my sons still have, they have lunch together once a week. Henry Gibson. All right, 877-876-PHIL is a number here. Now we're going to kick off, and we will continue this through on to the second segment of the show. But we will kick off with the Carter analysis, if you want. Jimmy Carter, the former president of the United States, saying that much of what is directed at President Obama in terms of criticism has maybe not so much a racial component, but it is the result of a racist mindset. The White House, however, said that President Obama does not believe he's being criticized because of his race. Spokesman Robert Gibbs said today that Obama, the nation's first black president, doesn't think that criticism of his policies is based on the color of his skin. The president has said this. One of the things that I like about Obama, and it isn't anything that comes as a surprise. It's coming as a surprise to a lot of conservatives and a lot of liberals. And fortunately, I ain't neither one. I'd rather choke to death. I would rather take a sip out of a toilet at Yankee Stadium than be a liberal or conservative. But one of the things that comes as a surprise to those people is, for instance, to the conservatives, that Obama is extending aspects of the Patriot Act, and that comes as a surprise to the liberals too. Or that he believes that, you know, releasing these pictures from Guantanamo, or that he believes that there is something to be said for the discussion of co-ops as opposed to a national plan. Or there is something to be said for some of these other ideas that have been floated by Republicans. And I don't know that the Republicans in the Senate or in the House have been all that forthcoming with the rest of us in telling us just how I think, just how amenable the president has been to working on some of these things. Some of us want to think the worst of this man. Some of us just want to see him do well, not because he's a black president. Oh, I really hope he does good because he's a black, but I want him to do well because I'd like the country to do well. All right, anyway, here is this morning Press Secretary Robert Gibbs disputing President Carter's claim that criticism of Obama is based in large part on racism.
The president does not believe that criticism comes based on the color of his skin. We understand that people have disagreements with some of the decisions that we've made and some of the extraordinary actions that had to be undertaken by both this administration and previous administrations to stabilize our financial system, to ensure viability of our domestic auto industry. Like I said, the president does not believe that it's based on the color of his skin.
Now, I don't know what anybody and his critics are going to say about that. The president has said, no, I don't believe that that's true. I don't believe that what President Carter said is true. Now, some of his critics may say, and in fact, I've got money that says they will say this, oh, he's just saying that to kind of, to make him look good, but he really believes what Carter believes. I guarantee you that'll be the response tomorrow by some people. What the response should be is, well, that's pretty consistent with the guy that he's been. He hasn't always taken the party line. And he's pissed off just as many Democrats or liberals as he has conservatives. All right, we're going to come back. We've got more on President Carter saying that much of the criticism about Barack Obama comes from a racial mindset in this country. And I agree with a lot of what he's saying there. I draw the line, I think, at some of the Hitler stuff. I think some of it begins to slop over into just extreme criticism of the power structure that is not unlike what was done directed at President Bush. But we'll talk about it. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And also coming up, Acorn makes wildly conflicting defenses of their San Bernardino employees. We're going to be playing back some Acorn audio from one of their executives, and it's almost embarrassing how this individual cannot stay on point. But you'll hear what I'm saying when you hear it on The Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, I almost forgot, but I didn't forget. This is huge. As you know, we every night stream video of our show as well as audio. The audio of our show is available for download at www.philhendryshow.com. And starting tomorrow, the video on demand feature is up and working.
All right, man. You have people are calling about being a pain in the butt and everything.
Yeah, I've been fielding a lot of calls, too.
All right, well, all of that stuff is done, and the fact is we have now have audio on demand that will be featured on our website, so if you miss the video of any given night's show, you can go there the next day and watch the show. So you can watch our show while you're having breakfast, and then, of course, you can lose your breakfast if you'd like in the sink and just, well, that was great, Phil, great watching you. Then get into your car with your laptop and just watch it there as you drive to work and then, get into an automobile accident or perhaps run right into a metro train or something. And then, no, I'm kidding, of course, but you'll be able to watch the show the next day. If you want to watch it, you can listen to it, of course, on affiliates all across the country, including our most recent affiliate on board in Charlotte, North Carolina, WBCN, and a great many others and more announcements along the way about that. But our on-demand video available as of tomorrow. So if you can't watch the live video on any given night, you'll be able to download it. You won't be able to download. You can watch it streaming from the site. These will not be downloads, the video files, because they're just too huge to download. And we'll keep about a five-day archive of the video, so you can watch a week's worth of shows at any given time. All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number. We're getting the calls in our next quarter hour. We're also going to be talking with Bobby Dooley, who is hoping to launch a radio show of her own or a radio segment. We'll talk to her about what is on her mind. She's the president of the Western States Homeowners Association. She's a PTO president, and she feels lacking in our communications arena are the opinions and attitudes of just regular folks like her. So we'll talk with her. In any event, you heard what Robert Gibbs said, and that was the press secretary saying that the president does not believe that there is a racial component to the criticism of his administration and his policies. Now, I almost feel he has to say that. I don't know how well it plays if he says, yeah, you know, Jimmy's right, man. A lot of these, you know, a lot of you racists out there, that's why I'm not. I don't think that it would be presidential of him to respond in the affirmative or to agree. I also don't think that he should. I don't think that he should. Even if he felt, even if he went to bed every night convinced in his heart that racism is what's holding back his policies, I don't think he should say anything about it. But to be honest with you, I don't doubt his word. I just disagree with him. And so to that end, I agree with President Carter. I don't agree with President Carter when he talks about the Hitler pictures and the Nazi analogies and this. There, like I said, not everything in life, folks, is just black and white and cut and dried. There's a lot of gray area, or if you will, there are a lot of areas that are colors other than the black and the white. There's blues and greens and yellows. There are people who see Obama as just part of the same power train. There are people who see Obama as just part of the same federal autocracy. They're not very bright. They wouldn't understand government if you told them they had to or their firstborn would die slowly and, yes, painfully. They wouldn't understand government if you told them they were about to die slowly and painfully. It's just beyond their ability to understand what's happening around them because they're so hurt by life that they got to blame somebody, anybody, for the failure of their own lives. Now, here is former President Carter talking to NBC News that Obama's criticism is fueled by racism. Now, this is the Obama, just let me get Carter number two here, if you'll pardon the expression. Carter number two, here is where he is talking with NBC about this.
I think an overwhelming portion of the intensely demonstrated animosity toward President Barack Obama is based on the fact that he is a black man, that he's African-American.
All right. Now, the president went on to say, with his analysis, he explained he's concerned over these so-called racist attitudes.
Racism inclination still exists. And I think it's bubbled up to the surface because of a belief among many white people, not just in the South but around the country, that African-Americans are not qualified to lead this great country. It's an abominable circumstance and grieves me and concerns me very deeply.
Now, here is Carter implying Tuesday that Representative Joe Wilson's outburst to Obama last week had to do with racism.
And the outbursts that we see, the scatological language, the sign that I saw on television last night, we should bury Obama with Kennedy, for instance. And Obama is a Nazi, and Obama's picture with Hitler's mustache on it. Those kind of things are not just casual outcomes of a sincere debate over whether we should have a national program in health care or not. It's deeper than that. And I think that that's what has happened, unfortunately, in our country. I believe it's going to be self-correcting. And in the U.S. House of Representatives today, they condemn Joe Wilson for having made that kind of remark to the President of the United States.
All right, in any event, that was very difficult to hear, but he also, Carter, lumped in Joe Wilson. That's a tough call for me, maybe, maybe not. I agree more with Representative Clyburn, who was reading the resolution to censure Wilson. He said, and Representative Clyburn is black, he said it was an affront to the august institution of the United States Congress, the august body, and the traditions of the Congress. That was the egregious behavior, not necessarily race. There are others who automatically thought the Klan would ride again. That ain't going to happen either. The Klan is no American. Even the most virulent racist wants to be associated with the Klan. Now, the only problem with what Carter is saying, beyond him taking it to the extreme that it's racism even when they begin to compare him to Hitler, I don't see that. The only other problem I've got with all of this is that the exact same criticisms when it comes to Hitler and Nazis and despots are made were directed at George Bush. Now, nobody's going to tell me they weren't because I was here, I heard them, they happened, and as dumb as Ed Schultz is, he can't be that stupid. Because it was right there, Ed, man, in living color, and you must have not been very interested in doing a talk show back in that day. Well, what were you doing back then, man? Were you still, what, milking cows or something? I don't know what you did. But the fact is that the same kind of hateful, and I don't mean racially charged hate, I'm talking about out-of-control, hateful speech was directed at Bush. And where was Jimmy Carter and the rest of those people when all of that stuff was happening? We'll find out. World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
Number is 877-876-PHIL. And I don't know, when we talk about Carter and we talk about his opinion as it pertains to President Obama and the criticism of Obama being something that originates with racism, I don't know that we're really talking about racism, because racism is the belief that a race is either inferior to one or one race is superior to another, that there are differences, almost as if there are differences between species of animals, between races. Now, this is quack science, and it has been thoroughly discredited. It took the last century to do that. I mean, up until the middle of the last century, many of these attitudes were believed, and believed quite seriously. Is it more a discomfort or a lack of comfort with people who don't look the way we look? Now that, you may be getting to some truth. Do you, for instance, a white guy looks at a black guy, is he going to say, I'm more intelligent than him? I don't think so. Is he going to say that guy's more violent than me? He may, but it may not be because he believes the guy was born that way. It's the experience that man has lived through that is foreign to the white guy, and maybe vice versa. I'm speculating, you know? Because it's a pretty serious area to get into. Nobody wants to be called a racist. Most people don't think they are racists. Although I have heard it said by people of color, black people in particular, I'd rather sit in a room full of Klansmen than sit in a room full of well-meaning whites, nice white folks who claim to be very colorblind and claim to be very open-minded. And in point of fact, are just, quote, doing me a favor, end quote, by talking to me, you know. What comes to mind are some countries that do not have a multiracial reality like we have, and yet they look down their noses at us and say, look at those Americans, they don't know how to get along together. Why, if they were living in Sweden, why, well, there's no country in the world that has a demographic a makeup, the population makeup that we have, not a country in the world. So that's why I'm always trying to remind you guys, what we are living through in America, no other country has ever lived through. What we're trying to deal with, the problems we're trying to solve, no other country has ever had to deal with. And for us to look across the waters to the example of the Europeans and say, oh gosh, I wish they respected us more, is the silliest thing. If it wasn't so tragic, it would be as silly and as laughable as anything. All right, let's go to a phone call. Joe in San Antonio, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Joe, what's on your mind tonight?
So much, Phil, I don't know where to start.
Your heart is full, huh? You're bursting at the dam is bursting.
No, the bile is coming out of my nose.
The bile, okay. Probably.
No, okay.
Wrong organ. No. Wrong body organ.
Anyway, hey, listen, I can't wrap my head around the conservative talk show and TV people that all they dwell on is this socialization of our nation and health care, and they don't say anything about Obama extending parts of the Patriot Act. They don't talk about Obama during the campaign saying that Al-Qaeda is in Afghanistan. That's where we need to be. We need to find Osama bin Laden and kill him. That's his words.
They don't listen to him when he says, I don't want to be in the automobile business. I don't want to take over the automobile industry. This was dropped in my lap by the auto industry. They don't listen to that. They somehow said, oh, Obama, he created this problem. He's going to socialize it. They don't listen, Joe, and they won't listen because their job is to get viewers. Their job is to make money for their advertisers, and they'll do it any way they can. The important thing is that you not believe them and that the people that are viewing this not be fooled into thinking that what they're viewing and what they're listening to is something that is heartfelt by the people that are saying it. That's a hard thing to get people to understand. I mean, I saw a lady the other day with a sign that said Beck 2012. And I was wondering, she's not serious. She's not. Maybe what she's saying is he really makes a lot of sense, you know, to her. But that's scary in and of itself, you know. But Joe, thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Nashville. It's Randy. Randy, what's going on tonight?
Oh, same old stuff, brother. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Yes, sir.
I just think Obama's one of the main guys making any sense right now with this race issue. There were so many protests and people raising Cain over President Bush's policies, and nobody said it was because he was white. You know, I disagree with a lot of Bush's policies, and nobody said anything. But I disagree with some of Obama's policies, and it really irks me because I disagree with the policy to get called a racist by most.
Well, I'm not calling you one, and I don't think that Carter is saying across the board 150,000. I think he says the more hate you disagree, that's one thing. Carter's saying that the more hateful imagery is racial, but I don't even agree with all of that. I think,
only, what is it, 11 to 15% of America's population being black and Obama winning the election pretty much with a landslide, that's got to say something about racism. I mean, there's not that many, I think, anyway, racist people in the world. If it was,
that's why I think it's a misnomer. I think I don't think it's the correct term to use. I don't think it's the correct term to use, Randy. Because
you're a racist automatically.
I would say this much: if you're walking down the street and you see a black man coming your way, I know you know that you are seeing the difference immediately. You're saying black guy.
Oh, yeah.
And I also know that that represents something to you. It may not represent something inferior. It may not represent necessarily something so different from you that you need to be afraid of it. But you see that guy and he sees you and the two of you know there's a difference. Oh, and some people call that discomfort and that lack of comfort and that lack of knowledge. Some people call that racism. That word, I think, is overused. What we have is racial discomfort, racial unease, perhaps racial mistrust. And a lot of people, and Randy, thanks for your call. And a lot of people may say, well, that's racism, isn't it, Phil? Why wouldn't you trust a black guy? Why wouldn't I trust? It isn't because I think he's worse than me. Well, then why don't you trust him? I don't trust people based on experience. I don't trust people based on their life experience and where they originate from and who they know and where they've been. I mean, I know whites that I don't trust because of who they are. And I might think that a black person is automatically coming from an experience that's so different from mine. It doesn't make him bad. It doesn't make him worse than me. It makes him so different from me. I have a trust issue going on.
Do you?
Do I what?
You don't trust blacks, do you?
You don't trust me.
I'm not saying me. I'm saying me, everybody, us, we, you know?
Yeah, but you trust blacks.
I take people one at a time, but probably to answer your question, no, I don't. I'm kidding.
Oh, come on, man.
I'm kidding. Jesus. 8778. So you understand what I'm saying? Racism is the belief that a race is inferior or superior, that there is something that is biologic, physiologic, psychologic, and lacks a lot of logic, and those guys are inferior, superior. I don't know that that's really what's going on in our country anymore. I think what it is now is this discomfort at, okay, so we're equal, that's cool. How do we do this? Do I dance with a black chick? I mean, do you go out with a, is that what that, is it, you know, is social, is it, I mean, how many people, I don't want to embarrass people. When I hear somebody say some of my best friends are black, and it's amazing how many people say that, even though it's become a joke. It's a joke when you hear that from a white person. I tend not to want to embarrass them by asking them, how many black folks have you had to your house? Right? Because I know the answers, if they answered honestly, would be, last week there was actually none. You know, but is that about them being inferior or that person being superior? Or is there just this discomfort, and I don't know how else to put it, between the races that that we're not getting at, man? And every time we say racist, we're just pissing people off, and we're not getting to it, and we're not really explaining it, and we're not, we're just making the situation worse, I think. All right, here is Sam in Phoenix. Sam, what's on your mind tonight?
Hey, how's it going?
Very good, thanks.
Oh, great program.
Yes, sir.
First time, and I just wanted to say that you're right on. I believe President Carter's right on. I think racism exists not only in the white community, but it exists everywhere. And, the definition about racism or the way we're putting it out, maybe we're not defining it the way it should be or maybe. But the point is this. There's still – just put it – when have you seen someone saying you're a liar to a president? Even if they're wrong about something, that – doesn't really happen, you know, in this country.
Well, I directly to his face, no. We did play last night this guy, Pete Starks, who was on the floor of the House while Bush was president. I didn't say this directly to Bush, but tell me what the difference is. It's very slight. He was on the House of the floor of the Congress, on the floor of the House of Representatives, and he was saying that Bush enjoys seeing young men and women killed in Iraq. He has them sent over there for his personal amusement. Now, that's about as scurrilous and slanderous and vicious a thing as I've ever heard in my life. It wasn't said directly to Bush, but it was said into a microphone. It was broadcast all over the world, and it was as hateful a thing without the racial component as I'd ever heard.
Yeah, and I think we never heard it in the House because the House is something sacred to say for our country. For us to say something like that, or for a representative to say something like that in the House, I mean, that takes a lot of unrespect, you know, to someone. To be honest, and not only to someone, but to
unrespect. You know, I like that word, unrespect. I like that word. That's a good word. Disrespect. No, you're right. It shows that particular congressman thinks he's at a ball game. He doesn't, and you know, we see this in our society. There's a great deal of slob-like behavior. There's a real sloppy approach to social decorum. And the Congress of the United States is the one place we can turn on that C-SPAN. We can look at these guys, and they're calling each other the distinguished gentleman, and they're calling each other Madam Speaker, and they're doing everything in the Robert's Rules of Procedure, parliamentary procedure, and it's quite a wonderful thing to witness. And when we hear some slob sit there and say, you lie, it's embarrassing to us. It's broadcast all over the world. God knows how many countries were watching this. This is a speech to the joint session of Congress. And he made our country and he made our representative body look like a bunch of dumbasses that are sticking their hands in a hollow log to catch catfish or something. Sam, thanks so much for your call. And I realize that was probably racist of me talking about catfish, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, it wasn't, because that's never mind. Like some dumbass who's sitting there throwing cards into a hat in a motel in downtown, L.A. How about that? 877-876-PHIL, the number. We'll continue talking a little bit about this. We've got some news on the ozone hole. Guess what? It's getting smaller, not bigger. I don't know whether that's significant in the global warming discussion. Maybe not. But I just monitor these things. I thought I'd let you know. 877-876. And then also coming up, liberal groups want CNN to fire Lou Dobbs for his, quote, hate speech. Now, we got to talk about this thing, hate speech. I know I use the word hateful. When I say hateful, I mean hateful as in attitude. Hate speech, though, as it was codified, meant having a racial or a discriminatory component relative to the person's orientation. You understand what I'm saying? We'll be back. We'll talk about it. 877-876-PHIL, our website, philandryshow.com, for live streaming video right now of our show.
Phil Henry.
famous Bill Hendry Show.
You know, you may want to ask yourself this question before we go on with anything else. We talk about Barack Obama and the attitudes toward him being racial and not having to do with policy. For just a moment, for people who are upset with that criticism, I don't know whether this has to do with racism or racial discomfort, but if George Bush were president right now, if John McCain were president right now, there is a very, very strong, possibility we'd still be having a discussion of health care. You heard Obama the other night cite John McCain for his contributions to sculpting compromise and consensus on the health care plan. And McCain was smiling, and he was accepting the president's congratulations and thanks. You also know that John McCain was back in Washington before the election, and he was in that roundtable with a great many senators, both Republican and Democrat, putting together the TARP resolution, the TARP legislation with the president, passing this thing and getting it done. You know that we have had Republican presidents utilize the federal office of the president and the constitutional power of the president to impose federalism on states, Republicans, conservatives. You know that when a guy, a Republican or a Democrat, occupies the White House, he's got a tendency to piss off both sides because he ain't any longer a Democrat or Republican, is he? And the question that I have is, how much different would things be were John McCain president of the United States right now? Would the discussion on health care not be as extreme? Well, let me tell you something. Any discussion of health care reform is extreme for most of these people. When I say these people, I'm talking about those Tea Party jackballs, okay? Any discussion of bailouts for businesses would be extreme for some of these people. But I'm telling you right now, as God made me and all the little green apples, man, McCain would be right feet first in the middle of these discussions right now as president. He'd be talking about health care reform. He'd be talking about stimulus packages. He wouldn't just be talking about tax cuts. He'd have to work with a Democratic Congress. Even if he had a Republican majority, even if he had that, he'd recognize the severity of what happened to the banking institutions and the banking sector called for something a lot more dramatic than just cutting taxes and holding your breath and hoping. All right, 877-876-PHIL, the number here on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're going to go to another phone call here. Carlos in Mesa, Arizona. Carlos, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. What's going on?
Hi, Phil. You know, you're the only guy that's being honest about this racial discussion. And a caller earlier said something about the people on the right and all this, how racist they are. But, you know, you just brought up if McCain was the president or the Republicans in their power. I listen to left-wing talk radio, and I hear them calling Michael Steele, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, J.C. Watts, Alan Key.
Yeah.
You know, Clarence Thomas, all Oreos, Uncle Tom.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, they had Condoleezza Rice as Aunt Jemima, man. You remember that? When she was named as Secretary of State. How do they get away with that, man? Where do they get off pulling that kind of stuff?
Exactly. I mean,
and then turn around.
Educated black people who I remember 20 years ago, they were complaining there wasn't enough black people, couldn't make it. I mean, now look, we've got a president of the United States is black. I mean, I like Obama that he's risen above all this. But the thing is, you're the only guy other than maybe Lou Dobbs that's being honest that I've heard.
They're trying to kick Lou off the air. So
no, I don't get it. He goes after both sides like you do.
It's just a liberal group, man. That's
all.
Anyway, I appreciate that very much, man.
All right.
Thanks for your call, Carlos. 877-87. Here is Andy in Worcester, Massachusetts. Andy, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good, man.
Worcester, by the way, Worcester, Massachusetts.
You're right. As soon as I said it, I'm like, what am I saying? You know.
That's all right. Everybody gets it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know how to pronounce that city's name, and I just I decided I'd screw it up. It's a part of me that just tries to mess stuff up, you know?
Yeah, I've actually heard it both ways, to be honest, even from people around here. I don't think there's any wrong way to say it.
All right, brother, thank you very much for that consideration. What's on your mind tonight, man?
Hey, I just want to say that I don't even think Barack Obama would be in office if he was white. You know what I mean? He spent 1 year in the Senate. You know what I mean? I think if he didn't have this race card thing to pull every time somebody got upset with him, I don't even think he'd be in there.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. Jimmy Carter had one term as governor of Georgia.
Jimmy Carter also won a Nobel Peace Prize for bringing peace to the Middle East.
Wait a minute. Before Jimmy Carter was elected, that's when he was president. But Jimmy Carter, Jimmy was president. Yeah, Obama hasn't even been president 1 year, you know. We don't know what's going to happen. But Jimmy Carter had been a one-term governor of Georgia. George Bush had a stint in the House of Representatives. That's George Bush Sr. And the rest of his experience was sort of bureaucratic. I said this during the campaign. I'm going to say it again. I can give you an example, and I can give you another example, and another example of presidents who had all kinds of experience and were absolute disasters for this country. Are we looking for guys who've got ideas, or are we looking for guys with a resume? What are we looking for here? This is President of the United States. It's not exactly the CEO of GM. We're looking for visionaries, man. This is a gig above and beyond anything else that we know. And we're looking for real vision. I don't know you find that in a resume. We'll be back with Lou Dobbs and Acorn and a whole mess of things. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.